job down at the local mill. Work dried up, not a mill is ill. I can't pay my bills. Repo man is at my door. They used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore. Well, I had me a wife, kids, a car, and a boat. Things got bad, now the boat won't float. I don't like it. Proud of people. They used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore. We're not a working. We're not a working. We're just not working.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the World Labor Hour, brought to you on the air by listener supporter community radio station WFT in Champaign, Illinois, and broadcasting at 90.1 FM in Central Illinois, and webcasting live worldwide at weft.org. The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the station manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Now, here's Bob with some of our underwriting announcements.
This hour of programming is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month. For more information or for the unemployed and underemployed helpline, give them a call at area code 217-328-2295. And the Graduate Employees Organization Union, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio. And programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour.
Okay, thank you, Bob. We're going to have we had a scheduled guest today that was going to be calling in from Pittsburgh, California. I didn't realize there was a Pittsburgh, California. It's in the Oakland Bay Area. They've been having quite a community struggle out there, and we're going to get them back on the show, though, sometime, probably in May, I rescheduled them. So today we're just going to have kind of an open show, and anybody that'd like to call in to, say anything, comment, you're more than welcome to. We got the phone lines open at 359-5483. So anyway, so we're going to have some news stories here. Interesting quick little news story I saw right before I left the house this morning. It looks like Dr. Margaret Flowers, who actually has been interviewed on the Labor Hour a couple times, basically announced that she's starting her own conscientious objector campaign against Obamacare. Basically, she has no health insurance, and she's refusing to sign up for any of the corporate health care, and she's going to refuse to pay the fine. So I sent her a message saying that I was planning on doing that anyway privately, and I'm glad to hear that her and other people are actually going to be doing this in mass, if you will. So,
Dave, yeah. Apparently I might have that opportunity in the future when they bring that heavy tax in, and the contractors won't want to have our health insurance.
That's correct. See, that's another thing. See, that's the thing is all these good-intentioned people out there, many of them people we know and like, Bill, think that Obamacare is the best thing since sliced bread. Of course, someone will get angry when you say that. They'll say, no, we never said that. We just said it was a step in the right direction. Well, you know what? It's a step in the right direction to further consolidate corporate health care in this country. And there's a lot of provisions in there, including not allowing states to have their own state Medicare for All systems until 2018 at the earliest, and then only with federal approval. But the other thing in that whole thing is this whole Affordable Care Act, the Obamacare, is going to systematically destroy union health care plans, with the top rate going to eventually go up to 40% tax on union-provided health care plans.
Well, I'm glad I vote green.
Yeah, well, you know what? I say there's more than one way to skin a cat, even though I hate that that metaphor.
I look that up one of these days.
Yes, but the thing is, I think the corporate interests contribute to both the Democratic and Republican parties. I think working people need to have our own sort of diversified strategy, and that is vote green, vote socialist, vote independent, vote labor, and when there's an opportunity to support a populist progressive Democrat in the primaries. We just saw here. Yes, go ahead, Bill.
Well, I was just going to say, I think it's pretty obvious that on the local level, that is very effective, both here with Carol Ammon and in Seattle with
Shama Sawant.
Yes.
Well, she's a socialist.
Seattle. Both of them were the outsiders in those races.
Yes, yes.
Carol Ammon's the Democratic establishment here, Dave. Didn't you say mentioned $200,000 spent?
$185,000.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, close to $200,000. I mean, that is unheard of. And you know what? Here's the thing. I think, this is my opinion, but I think Mike Madigan and the state Democratic Party would rather see a Republican elected than somebody like Carol Ammons or Will Guzzardi in Chicago, who had a very similar campaign as Carol, fighting the machine. It's happened before. In fact, Rahm Emanuel, before 2008, when President Obama was elected, his main function up in Chicago was out in the west and northern suburbs to basically defeat any kind of populist, working class, progressive candidate that was going to run in the Democratic primary, even if they knew the Republican was going to win, because they fear that working people are going to basically take control of the Democratic Party, and that's the last thing they want, because they've gotten too cozy with all the corporate money and corporate special interests.
Yes, I was just reading an article this morning. Can't remember where it was. It's something. I use Facebook as actually a real news feed. I choose friends who I think are going to put up news that I am interested.
Not showing pictures of the dinner you had last night or using as your online diary. I know.
Well, I'm really glad that fad of describing your meals in sentence fragments is finally gone.
Okay.
That was pretty annoying for a while. But anyway, and it was discussing about just exactly what you're saying, is that the Democrats are so beholden to Wall Street. It was about Obama and Steny
Hoyer.
Yeah, they were addressing some kind of student group thing, and they thought it was so ironic that Obama's talking about cutting deficits, you know, mm-hmm. instead of what he's going to do to help students at such a thing.
Yeah.
And it was put on, the president of this organization is the president, or it was the son of this, that Peterson.
Oh, really?
Who's got that huge campaign against Social Security.
And Medicare, yes.
Yeah, or...
Pete Peterson,
yes. Oh, yes.
So, yes, I don't know. There's this movement in Chicago, isn't there, with the teachers' unions?
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm looking at is, I don't know, I can't remember the 10 green principles,
yes.
you know, but I do remember I was looking at their new Green Deal, mm-hmm. and their new Green Deal is exactly what I'm looking for.
Yes.
And that's exactly what we should have done in 2008-2009.
When the financial collapse. Right after the
that
financial
is
collapse.
True. We would have been back, and we might have even, you know...
In addition to that, do what Iceland did, basically jail the bankers,
right.
take over the banks that are, you know, collapsing, and give a moratorium on mortgage holders who are behind in their debts. Here in the United States, they did just the opposite.
But what I'm looking at is something, you know, they need to start looking at the Green Party, mm-hmm. because it is a party.
Yes.
It is there. Maybe it's here and there. Maybe it's here and gone. It seems to be gone
here locally.
In Champaign. But, I mean, they were on the ballot in Illinois.
Yes. Because of Rich Whitney's gubernatorial campaign, which he received over 13% of the vote.
Well, yes, which had a lot to do with Rod Begley.
Indeed.
You know, don't you think those are disaffected Democrats?
Yes.
There's things happening, like you say, all around the country. Mm-hmm. Kashama Shawant in mm-hmm. Seattle. The folks we had on a month or so ago from Ohio,
mm-hmm.
where the Labor Party won.
Yep.
You know, I got a story here because you're talking about California and the Bay Area.
Yeah.
And Richmond, California had long been dominated by Chevron Corporation, which operates a 110-year-old oil refinery there. It's the largest in the state. And in August 2012, a huge explosion and fire nearly killed a dozen Chevron workers, sent 15,000 residents to emergency rooms there.
Mm-mm.
You know, so it says in many communities, elected officials are reluctant to buck the biggest employer in town when it misbehaves. And it mentions Washington State, which offered Boeing $8.7 billion, you know. But in Richmond, California, Mayor Gail McLaughlin and the city council majority have taken a bold approach with Chevron, suing the oil giant for harming local citizens. The city rejected an offer to settle for an insulting $10 million, is what Chevron offered the city. McLaughlin demanded that Chevron spend a bigger share of its $21 billion annual profit on fixing hazards for refinery workers and residents. It says here that Richmond's mayor has the backing of the city council, and they're backed by the Richmond Progressive Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
The RPA's Refinery Safety and Clean Energy campaign is one of the many battles local progressives have waged since first winning city council seats in 2004. So this is happening in Richmond, California, Seattle, Washington, Ohio,
mm-hmm.
as you mentioned here with Carol Ammons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are not always beholden to the Democratic Party at this point, because they're finding alternatives that are working for them in their local communities.
Indeed. You know? And I believe the mayor and a couple, maybe one or two of the city council people, are Green Party people.
They're going to be up at that Labor Notes conference next week, apparently,
well,
Chicago.
Great.
So you get a chance to meet him, and Kashama Sawant is going to be up there, too,
yes,
is what
yes.
it says.
Uh-huh. I knew about Kashama, but I didn't know about the Richmond mayor.
Yeah. And they're forming alliances with local unions out there and stuff. This is all part of the Richmond Progressive Alliance, the RPA.
You know? Yeah.
Once again, another story where people are fed up with both parties.
Yep.
And are, you know, forming their local alliances and communities of progressive, socialist, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Finding people that stand up for what they believe should be their voice.
Yeah, I mean, I think whatever it takes. I mean, you know, it's funny because on the one hand, I have a big disagreement with one of our radio hosts here on the WFT, Stan Wagner, who does the Midwatch. He thinks that the Democratic Party is the only vehicle, okay? Now, I say to that, in some cases, maybe so, like with Carol Ammons. Then I get flack from the other end of the spectrum, if you will, of people who have given me crap for helping Carol Ammons, who don't live in this community, by the way, who live several states away, and saying that I'm supporting the Democratic Party by helping her. No, I'm supporting an insurgent within the Democratic Party.
There's people who...
supporting a candidate that stands up for workers and poor people and the average person in their community.
Yes, and that's the bottom line.
Regardless of party.
Exactly, you know? Exactly. Yeah.
Except they don't tend to be Republicans.
I'd like to see some interesting segments come out of the Republican Party, like pro-labor Lincoln Republicans, if you will, but I'm still waiting on that one.
You know, well, I mean, there used to be, when WLS first went to talk radio, after Rush Limbaugh was a guy who described himself as a Lowell Weicker Republican.
Okay.
You know, sort of the John Lindsay hip liberal Republicans of the 60s.
Yes.
You know, but he was their liberal host after Rush.
Okay.
Right? But then you have people, and I can understand what they're talking about, and Emma Goldman's got a good quote on this. You know, if voting really did anything, it wouldn't be legal.
Mm-hmm.
And I have many friends who are just completely anti-voting.
Yeah, I do too.
And I do understand that, but I've been beaten into my head my whole life.
Yeah, what I say to that is, you know, as a tradesperson, I mean, I'm giving this analogy as a tradesperson, you know, is that you shouldn't, you know, you should have as many tools in your toolbox as possible.
That's right.
And you shouldn't limit yourself.
This is one thing I'm in agreement with Obama with in a different context.
Oh, boy, let's hear this.
All of the above.
All the above?
Yeah, not in energy,
but
when it comes to politics. Man, if your best thing is writing a letter... Write a letter. Mm-hmm. If your best thing is knocking on doors, hopefully somebody will have a campaign where you can knock on some doors.
Mm-hmm.
If your big thing's running for office, if you want, you know, do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's and do it however you can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's Democrats or Greens or Independent, I really miss having the Socialist Workers Party candidates on the ballot because I just like to click that off to mess with the old ladies who count the votes where I live.
Yes. You know, it's funny. I personally campaigned for Carol Ammons and knocking on doors. What I would say, and this would always perk people's interest, was that Carol is a working person like us. And she's been stirring it up in the community for fighting for people's rights for quite a few years now. And, I mean, that, you could just see it in their eyes. Those two things, saying those two things, really perked people's interest that didn't know about her. I'm telling you, people are fed up. People want change, but there's nobody out there nationally, you know, that's organizing people. You don't have the labor union bureaucracy doing it, for sure.
Well, Dave, you know what? I think labor unions, is there a much better example of non-functioning democracies than most unions in the United States? You know, they have the form.
Mm-hmm.
Like my local union, we used to have some slates for a while there after our trusteeship because the old gang was disgruntled and they'd run, you know, a slate. Now they just finally have all retired. Basically, and the last election we had one contested position.
Out of how many?
Out of, well, you would have president, mm-hmm. vice president, secretary, treasurer. They all run at the same time.
So about maybe nine
staggered.
Or so? Okay.
Let's see. President, secretary, treasurer. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And get this. He is, you also have the executive board, and I can't remember how many are on there. He is the only African-American official mm-hmm. In our local. Number two. Quite, it used to be in the past, a lot of times the vice president got to be an organizer business agent.
Mm-hmm.
Not Kenny.
Mm-hmm.
And the last time, and now we have a guy that they hired as the organizer business agent
mm-hmm.
who was not an officer.
Really?
Which is the first time that ever happened lately.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, because our old business agent died conveniently in the middle of his term, so the e-board could take the hand-picked choice of the international and put them in place so they'd be incumbents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, okay, folks, there it is, Democracy Now.
Yeah.
In action. Democracy in action.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's where And it's just one of those things where it's like, man, I mean, do I really want an anarcho-syndicalist society the way these people act?
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I tell you, it's interesting. But, you know, in general, people are fed up. And, you know, like in the 1930s, you had the Communist Party out there organizing people. And you had a major union that broke off from the Labor Federation, the United Mine Workers, and who formed an alliance with the Communist Party, went out there and did a lot of knocking on doors and organizing workers. You don't have that going on right now. Not yet, anyway.
And John L. Lewis was a Republican.
On top of all that, yes, indeed. But I got just a real quick news story here. It's winning $15 in Seattle, and it says, onto the ballot, into the streets. That's the headline for the next big moment for 15 Now, conference on April 26th to kick off a mass campaign in Seattle to collect 50,000 signatures for a robust $15 an hour minimum wage ballot initiative. Whether or not 15 Now will file those signatures in June, triggering a popular vote in November, depends on whether the city council passes a real $15 minimum wage ordinance and will be decided by a Democratic 15 Now conference in June. The credible threat of a winnable ballot initiative is the best tool under the current conditions of a weak union movement and a historically low level of strikes that working people have to push back attempts by big business and politicians to dramatically water down any effort for a $15 an hour minimum wage. So we'll keep you posted on that as things develop.
Oh, Dave?
Yes.
Real quick, Bob's got an important story here, but talking about a wage like that, I went to the bank to deposit my paycheck yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And somebody had left their check stub there. And it was for a non-union contractor,
mm-hmm.
okay? And it was $12.75 an hour.
Really?
Yes.
Doing construction work?
Right. And I took that check stub and I gave it to the clerk, you know, and so they could keep it for him or get it back to him. And I said, boy, I'm glad I don't have his job.
Okay, Bob, what else do you got for us?
This is a story out of New York about the Domino's pizza outlets agreed payout for a wage theft.
And really?
Yeah, the owners of 23 Domino's pizza outlets in New York have agreed to pay out just about $500,000, $448,000, to hundreds of employees who were paid less than the minimum wage due to a variety of labor law violations. Six Domino's franchisees in New York City and elsewhere in the state reached a settlement after admitting they broke the law. And this was New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman announced it on Thursday. It's estimated that some 750 workers will receive between $200 and $2,000 each. You know, there was an investigation by Schneiderman's office into the wage theft, found that some stores violated state laws. And so anyway, it says the settlement is the latest in a series of actions by Schneiderman amid a growing national campaign by unions and other representatives of low-paid restaurant workers for action against wage theft by bosses and a raise in the federal minimum wage from $7.25 to $10 or even $15 an hour. Schneiderman last week announced a $500,000 settlement with a McDonald's franchise in New York City. In December, he mandated the reinstatement of 25 Domino's pizza workers who'd been fired after complaining they were not being paid the minimum wage at their jobs at locations in Manhattan. It says here, meanwhile, seven lawsuits, some of them requesting class action status, were filed earlier this month against McDonald's and several of its franchises in California, Michigan, and New York. Lawyers announced that on Thursday. This comes after a story that came out earlier in March about car wash owners who are going to pay $3.9 million for unpaid wages, underreporting of employees on state unemployment and workers' compensation forms. Once again, in New York, the Attorney General there, Eric Schneiderman, he joined with some city council members and stuff like that. The settlements totaled $3.9 million with two interrelated car wash chains owned and operated by John Lague, Michael Lague, and Fernando Miguel Hayes, which together operated around 21 car washes in New York City. The settlements are a result of this Attorney General's investigation into widespread labor law violations, you know. And $2.2 million is going to be paid to an estimated 1,000 car wash workers for nearly 6 years of underpaid wages.
Oh, jeez. I wish we had that song, man.
Which song is that?
Car wash. Oh.
Yeah, working in the car wash.
You know, this is probably just the tip of the iceberg,
too. It is the tip of the iceberg. You know, these people have been abused by these bosses for years and years, you know. And these people blame it on the corporations, sit back and say, well, these are franchises.
Yeah. Yes,
they're arms and we're not responsible.
Oh, yeah, and that Chinese factory. We don't own it.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take a quick music break. I would like to remind listeners that we're currently in Pledge Drive here.
Oh, real quick, Dave.
Yes.
And Paul Muth is sitting here to answer phones for us. Okay. So, you know, keep them busy.
Yes, and I did. Actually, I got shorted 5 out of 7 paychecks from a contractor last year. And I was talking to a guy who worked for him before, and he had checks bounce. And he told me that one of their regular guys told him that he hadn't been paid for like 3 months.
What? Yeah. And that's a union contractor?
Yeah, but I got my money.
Okay.
You know.
Holy crap. I tell you. Okay, this is the World Labor Hour on WFT, Listen Supported Community Radio Station, and we will be right back. Stay tuned. Okay, that was Walter Trout, and we're going to talk a little about Walter Trout here in just a second. First, we got some public service announcements. Please mark your calendars for the next Milton Durber Lecture, Wednesday, April 2nd at 7 p.m. at the Wagner Education Center at the School of Labor and Employment Relations, the University of Illinois in Champaign at 504 East Armory Avenue. Professor Joseph McCartan, Georgetown University, will deliver the lecture, After Industrial Democracy, The Eclipse of Labor's 20th Century Ideal and the Search for a New Paradigm. paradigm. Today, Americans are witnessing an explosion of inequality, the decline of the union movement, and a growing distortion in the relationships between workers and their employers. To reverse these trends will require not just new labor laws and a revived union movement, but a new vision for 21st century labor relations. In this lecture, McCartan will trace the decline of the 20th century ideal of industrial democracy and sketch some prerequisites for a 21st century vision that could galvanize reform in the way the demand for industrial democracy did decades ago. So that's coming up here Wednesday, April 2nd at 7 p.m. at the Labor and Employment Relations Building, 504 East Armory in Champaign.
Hey, I haven't been to that since Richard Trumka was there.
And then it was called the Labor and Industrial Relations as opposed to... Yeah, the Institute of Labor and Industrial Relations. Now it's called this other thing, the School of Labor and Employment Relations.
Yeah. The junior partner to the capitalist department of the college.
Yes, yes. Okay, and you're invited. Rally Against Poverty Wages in Champaign at Representative U.S. Congressman Rodney Davis's Champaign office. And it's this Tuesday, April 1st at 12 noon. Join local Move Our members for a rally in Champaign calling out Representative Davis for refusing to raise the minimum wage. We'll be demanding that Congress raise the minimum wage and delivering a petition signed by hundreds of constituents. So come out for that if you can. April 1st at 12 p.m. They don't have the address. It's on Fox Drive, south of Kirby Avenue, near the intersection of Kirby and Neal. It'd be south. West of the intersection of Kirby and Neal's, kind of back in their ways. And don't forget to tune in this Saturday and every Saturday at 2 p.m. for another sports show hosted by fellow worker Neil Parthen at WRFU 104.5 FM and also televised on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. on Comcast Channel 6 or Urbana Public Television. Also on Sunday, this Sunday and every Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m., tune in for Labor's Worldview TV, also on Comcast Channel 6 or Urbana Public Television.
By the way, Dave, if you would listen to Rodney Simpson and you need a job, you would move to North Dakota.
Oh, really?
Because he actually believes that the Keystone XL pipeline is going to create 40,000 jobs. He did. He actually, I heard him say that.
Who said this?
That Rodney Simpson. What's his name? Davis. I don't know why I keep thinking it's Simpson. Maybe okay. I'm comparing him to Homer or something. But yeah. He's actually a younger guy. But he... Yeah, he was on, I believe it was AM 580, and mm-hmm. And they were asking him his opinion of Obama's State of the Union address. And he said that the Keystone XL pipeline was going to have 40,000 jobs. If he thinks that is true, then he does not have the cognitive ability to be in government.
He should talk to some of those people out there in Nebraska where the original Keystone went through, and the people there, the town council members, say, you know how many jobs are here now because of the pipeline? Zero.
Zero.
You know how many are in the county next to us? Zero. You know how many are in the county on the other
side?
Yeah,
because that pipeline
Zero.
Just keeps going.
Yeah. Yeah. He said they sent a crew of a few people up here from Texas, and they put it in about 2 weeks they were gone. He mm-hmm. said, you know, we don't see any benefits in the local community from that pipeline going through here.
Yeah, the only thing is negative effects from future potential oil
environmental
spills.
Well, besides that, there's so much disruption and destruction of roads from all the hauling that goes on. And, man, you know, pipeliners would be a little on the rowdy side, too. You know, you know what the old saying is, wine them, dine them, pipeline them. You know, you got to lock up the girl, you know.
Oh, I never heard that one. Now, what's going on with Walter Trout, the artist who just did his previous song we played?
He's waiting. He's in the hospital waiting on a liver transplant. Is that correct, Bill?
Yes. I don't have my computer now, and I'd actually forgotten about this week, but you could probably easily find this on Google. Just Google Walter Trout.
Mm-hmm.
And, he needs a new liver, and I think they're looking to raise $150,000. And last week, I did go to the website, and I tried to donate some money, but it screwed up and hung up. Mm. So I'm going to try again. But Walter Trout, you just heard that song. He's for the working people.
Yeah.
The name of his band is the Free Radicals, you know?
Okay, you know, this goes. Yeah,
his latest CD is titled "Blues for the Modern Days," and it's spelled D A Z E.
It's solid working, oriented lyrics, man.
He's working anymore, and he's got another song on there called "Turn Off Your TV."
Okay,
you know,
So
he's a great guitar player.
And I understand he had health insurance, and he still needs this kind of money.
That's my understanding.
I mean, if we had, if we had Medicare for all, people wouldn't have to be trying to do online donations.
Although at one point, I believe he was waiting on some more modern or newer type of treatments.
Mm-hmm, that the insurance wouldn't cover.
Was $1,000, and he had to go through 90 treatments, and his insurance company was refusing to pay that or something like that. But he was just here last summer. He was the headliner for the Champaign Blues Cajun Barbecue Fest.
Okay.
You know, so
hey, that's coming up here not too many months away, right?
Yeah.
Is it going to be downtown Champaign again this year?
Yeah, okay. And the same parking lots out there like that. You know,
okay. It's going to be like a desert.
Buckwheat Zydeco was one of the headliners.
Okay.
And, Curtis Salgado, I believe.
Okay. So you'll be giving us an update on that here pretty shortly, I imagine.
The guy named Salgado.
Curtis Salgado.
That's the name of the people that own that construction company that bounced the checks.
What a weird coincidence.
Hey, maybe they're helping underwriting his appearance.
You know, there's something interesting, though. I mean, these guys kind of had Italian accents. Okay?
Interesting.
And when I worked for Skirto out at the FedEx job, my boss's name was Guido.
Really?
And I worked for this company, VJ, out of St. Louis. Mm-hmm. Skirto's out of Chicago. Well, the V stands for Vitali. I don't know what the J stands for.
Okay.
And I've noticed kind of this interesting ethnic thing going along. You remember, you know, the Irish jokes by Anne Feeney, you know, talking about the Irish hod carriers.
Yeah.
You know, I wish I could tell that story, man. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
And,
you know, I knew that, you know, Italians were traditionally into a lot of the terrazzo and stuff. But
right.
I didn't know.
Well, look at the name, terrazzo.
Yeah.
What do you think that comes from? But I think it's the Irish. They came earlier when they were still building with stone and brick, so they had the hod carrying jobs.
Uh-huh.
And the Italians, hell, I think the Italians invented concrete.
Mm-hmm.
And their wave was another generation after.
Mm.
And it's just really interesting.
Yeah.
And now we have the Mexicans.
Mm-hmm.
And they're heavily into we're pretty much the laborers, a lot of our stuff.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Bob, you got a couple more underwriting announcements?
Yeah, we do. The Illinois World Labor Hours is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. And I will note that Richard Trumka came out this week against the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Finally.
So, yeah. And programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the Illinois Education Association Union. The Illinois Education Association's mission is to effect excellence and equity in public education and to be the advocacy organization for all public education employees.
Okay, thank you. You know, any of you out there listening, again, like I said, we're in pledge drive, so please, call in at the number to call Bob for the pledge drive is?
Area code 217-359-9338. And Paul is still here, and he's got some excellent DVDs that you can get.
Yes, Paul, tell us about those DVDs.
Yeah.
Okay, people know about Jeremy Scahill and Rick Rowley, maybe a little bit less or so. He's the videographer with Big Noise Films that did the Oscar-nominated Dirty Wars. And over the years, he's collected a series called Dispatches 1 through 7. And I got them from their distributor, PM Press. Am I coming through all right?
Yeah.
And we have them at maybe $100, special premium. And then also, Digital Disconnect from Robert McChesney, How Capitalism is Turning the Internet Against Democracy. It's a new book from the New Press. And also, he collaborated again with his colleague, John Nichols, to write a book called Dollarocracy, which doesn't take a lot of explanation.
Yes.
So those books, maybe at a little higher level, 120.
Mm-hmm.
We have a sliding upper end, maybe two. But please donate, and these are... It's great that Robert McChesney has donated these books to the project. He's a great supporter of community media, and you should be too. And if you're listening, so call 359-9338.
Yes, and we already got a pledge. I want to thank James Iman for calling in and pledging. Thanks a lot, Jim.
Oh, hey, I mentioned the pledge levels.
Okay.
And that is $40. I think it's been $40 ever since I can remember.
Okay.
For your basic membership, where you can vote for member-elected board members, mm-hmm. which sounds kind of strangely redundant, but mm-hmm. I believe there's three seats that are member-elected. And then you're also eligible to take the Airshifter training and perhaps do your own program on WEFT.
There you go. That's a sweet deal right there. I mean, because you get a lot of really good information out of the Airshifter training, mm-hmm. you know, technical stuff, and it's easy to do. I mean, don't be afraid. It's just a couple of buttons. A
couple
of
evenings, too, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and it could be a social thing, too. I mean, you know, I would never have met Bob Pelesny. I did meet Dave Johnson in the 80s on a job.
Yes.
We worked together on a job, but not Bob Pelesny, and I probably wouldn't have run into, you know, Dave that much mm-hmm. either. And then it's a $65 basic membership plus one thank you gift. Okay, yeah. You get one thank you gift, and apparently that could be a T-shirt. And we have sizes from small all the way through 4x extra large.
Okay. Ooh,
a tote bag or a baseball cap. At the $90 and 10 cent level, the 90.1, basic membership plus two gifts. At the $120 level, basic membership plus three gifts. And finally, at the $150 level, the long sleeve denim shirt embroidered with Listen Local. It's a cool logo.
Okay, okay.
It sizes small through 4x large.
Wow.
Bill, you remind me of some of those commercials I hear on Spanish radio. It's Sabado Domingo.
Actually,
I thought those commercials were really cool. A lot of, real loud, lots of energy, you know, real fast, you know. But
and I also like
great
the music.
Presentation there. Yeah, the music's good.
Because they have a great use of tubas and accordions.
Yes.
And it sounds so polka-ish.
Yeah, yes. Oh, it is. Absolutely. Yes. It's very similar to polka music. Okay, real quick here. This just came out this week. This is from our friend Mike Griffin in Decatur from the War Zone. And he writes articles periodically. And this is about the subject we have talked about here several times recently about the Tennessee VW Volkswagen United Auto Workers failed unionization vote. And the title of his article is Death of the UAW Kevorkian Style. Mike's got a real interesting, funny phrase of turn of phrase, but you know his information comes from years in the labor movement. I mean, decades in the labor movement. And anyway, just to give you some highlights here, we're going to have by the way, we're going to have Mike Griffin and Larry Solomon from Decatur, who used to be the past president of the Caterpillar UAW local over there, come on the World Labor Hour here sometime in May. So you know, this is kind of maybe a little bit of a preview, but anyway. Mike states, the loss of the United Auto Workers organized effort at Volkswagen in Tennessee is another fatal blow in the destruction of this nation's once most influential and militant union. Reporting by mainstream media has been sparse, inaccurate, and willfully incompetent. The media took a dive on the involvement of U.S. Senator Bob Corker and Tennessee Governor Bill Haslam, even though we picked up a lot of that in the alternative media, I will add. Okay. The corporate media never questioned the incompetent or corrupt union leadership either, as they often benefit employers by working against the interests of members. Not one media outlet questioned UAW President Bob King about the horrible concessions the United Auto Workers put on the table or their impact on workers. He says, fair and accurate investigation reporting could have led to a different outcome. Anyway, he said, VW pledged neutrality in the organizing effort after the UAW conceded everything but their firstborn sons. The Tennessee Weasels Governor Bill Haslam and U.S. Senator Bob Corker mounted a full-fledged fear campaign.
Possums.
Yeah. Yeah. VW workers were threatened that if they voted in a union, the plant would not get new work, receive any more public subsidies, and the plant's future may be at risk. Could the governor, a U.S. senator, and other high-powered players initiate an anti-union campaign without the nod from VW? Here's a story that is pleading for media and Justice Department investigation. Could a link between VW, Corker, and Haslam produce not only labor violations but RICO as well? RICO statute violations. They usually use RICO charges against organized crime. But anyway, Serious questions need to be raised about the gullibility and absolute stupidity of the United Auto Workers. He says, with pressure from the IG Metal Workers, VW's powerful German union, VW supposedly agreed to neutrality in the election process. He said, but VW stalled the election for months after the UAW received a card majority, while VW allowing at the same time salaried employees to wear anti-union T-shirts and whip up fear from inside the plant. And then outside the plant, Haslam, Corker, and the Goon Squad worked a willing corporate media.
Dave, does he mention Grover Norquist?
Grover Norquist.
You know, he does later in the article, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yes.
They were using things. God, these people drive me nuts. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's like there's a union, like it's a union army from the North in the Civil War. You know, the same thing with Hitler and socialist.
Yeah.
You know?
Kind of on the same topic there. Last week, Friday, rapper and actor Common held a concert in Jackson, Mississippi to support the Nissan workers in nearby Canton who are trying to organize and join a union. Common was joined at the concert by actor Danny Glover and by Sean Diddy Combs, who sent a video message of support saying, "My heart is with you, my spirit is with you, and the workers at Nissan. Workers' rights are civil rights." And they go on to say, they saw the kind of pressure and intimidation the workers faced last month at the union's representative election at Volkswagen in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And as you say, the Volkswagen election, the company had promised neutrality in the election, and that's a promise that Nissan has emphatically not made, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting stuff that some people are standing up there in Jackson, Mississippi.
That's great to hear.
In favor of the union workers down there and their rights to organize.
Yeah, so. I don't have time to read the entire article, and it's kind of lengthy, you know, to read on the air. But Mike Griffin later in the article gets into very specific detail about how the United Auto Workers has become basically completely lost touch with their membership over the last several decades, has pushed concessionary and two-tiered wage contracts, and he gives specific examples that he was personally involved in over in Decatur in the
and
early 90s.
Perhaps Larry Solomon and might be able to
Larry
explain
Solomon
that.
Can talk a little bit about that. He talks also about the sellout of the AccuRide workers in Henderson, Kentucky, who the UAW sold out because they wouldn't accept a concessionary contract.
Oh, some other Southern auto workers might have heard about that.
Oh, I'm sure. And then there was in Cleveland, North Carolina. There was the I'm trying to remember the name of the plant, but it was a parts plant for UAW, and the Cleveland Five. In fact, we had them here in town and actually on the radio show here a couple years ago.
And then they were at the IMC that
That's
day.
Correct. Yes. So, I mean, one betrayal after another. So is it any wonder? I mean, when you have a union that's following a corporate union model, an anti-democratic corporate union model, how do they and basically making concessions one after another company at the expense of the workers, how do they expect to get workers to sign up? I mean, why should they? I mean, you think about it.
Well, besides that, if they're going to use the corporate model, don't they have a fiduciary responsibility to us?
Not to their members. That's a good point.
Are we stockholders or what?
No. It's like I said in the Carpenters Union when they try to use that analogy about the Carpenters, we're not a union, we're a business. Oh, really? And then I said, so that means we're the shareholders? That means we get to vote for all of our board of directors and everything, which we don't. So what does that make us then? If we're not shareholders, what are we? I'll tell you what we are. We're cattle and livestock to be pimped. That's what the members have become in a lot of these unions.
Some people feel that way, but some people are taking steps to maybe stop that. You know, there
yes,
was
indeed.
The important decision this week when the NLRB came out and ruled about the Northwestern football players up there.
Okay.
You know, so in a ruling that could have a ripple effect across the NCAA, the National Labor Relations Board found Wednesday, I believe this week, that the football players at Northwestern who were considered no more than student athletes are in fact employees. And the NCAA has long been under scrutiny for its treatment of the players who generate college sports enormous profits. Players have historically only received payment in the form of tenuous scholarships and occasional stipends, while the average pay for NCAA coaches was a startling $1.64 million
really?
2012.
They're constantly
the salary for NCAA coaches. That one coach at Alabama, Nick Saban, makes $6 to $7 million a year.
Well, they're usually the highest paid state employee in whatever state they're in.
You know.
That's ridiculous.
Former Northwestern quarterback Kane Coulter, the face of the union drive, still sounded exuberant in the post-ruling interview with ESPN on Wednesday. He said, "Today has been a huge success, not just for Northwestern football players, but for college players around the nation," Coulter said. "We should find great pride in that we're taking steps on our journey to secure basic protections and basic rights," Coulter also highlighted three bread-and-butter issues that ignited the union drive: medical care in the event of injuries that manifest after graduation, academic support while in school, and the securing of scholarships. While bargaining for actual pay is not currently on the table, unionizing does open the door for further negotiations. Down the line, the players could ask for anything from a share of uniform sales, the right to sponsorships and advertisements, to wages. So,
Good, interesting thing.
This is just a local opinion here, and then immediately being appealed. So now it's going to go to the five board NLRB in Washington, D.C., and everybody's expecting they'll go right up to the Supreme Court.
Wow. Well, so, wait a minute, though. Is like the GEO. This is a state school, okay?
Yes.
Well, Northwestern's a private school.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, it's a private school? Then that's why there's no Well, see, if it was a state school, it'd be an Illinois State Labor Board.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because GEO, that's how they got to be employees. Mm-hmm.
And that went all the way to the Illinois State Supreme Court.
Yeah, so, okay, so these guys would be on the national level since it's private.
This is interesting, and it's caused quite a controversy. Uh-huh. I mean, you know, it's been March Madness for all the basketball going on. But every sports program has talked about this for the last 3 or 4 days, about the repercussions of how it could end up affecting things down the way. People are talking about the fact that, well, if we're going to pay the athletes now or whatnot, then we're going to start taxing them for the money that they're getting for scholarships, and they're saying that the average scholarship is like $50,000 or $60,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
So now the IRS will have the right to go in and start taxing these athletes on their scholarships.
Interesting.
So there's a lot of repercussions.
Well, the scholarships will go away, man, because they're getting paid anyway. Why go ahead and give them a scholarship if you're paying them?
Well,
if they get enough pay, so that's what I'm saying,
pay, right?
And I don't even know what I'm thinking. But no, this whole thing with the coaches' salaries, I mean,
absurd.
That is just, you know, but they say, oh, it's worth it because of the ticket sales. And then it's the same thing about all the administrators at the university who are all way overpaid, man.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, well, we got to get these really smart people so that we'll save money because they're so smart and valuable.
Yeah, but, they figure out ways to get higher wages and bring in their cronies. You know?
Right, I am so sick. And then, you know, I mean, then this corporate CEO. I am so sick of these people. Why? How?
With their golden parachutes, you know? They gave them millions of dollars to leave the company.
Yeah.
At the end, it's like, you were worthless. You ran into bankruptcy and stuff, but we'll give you $20 million to go away.
Yeah. Then these guys are like, oh, they're treating us like Nazis treated the Jews.
Oh, yeah. And some of the CEOs were saying that.
Yeah, and that Sam, Sam Zell, like, oh, well, we make so much money because we just work so much harder than everybody else. I would like to see him come out and pour some concrete with me.
Yeah.
All right? Sam Zell, if you're such a hard worker, you ought to be able to run the chute, puddle it, and finish it all by yourself.
Well, let's not. Okay, that might be a little out of his expertise.
Well, yeah,
if you will.
He's about 2,000 years old, you know.
But seriously, I don't see how these people are not worth that kind of money.
No way. Dave, there's a study that was done, and what they did was they had people play Monopoly.
Uh-huh.
Okay, then they drew straws, and one of the players who got whatever straw got an advantage. They got more money to start with.
Right.
Okay? And so they play the game, and of course, they win.
Yeah.
All right? Yeah. But what they found out is that these people who win, their personality changes while they're playing the game and winning.
Uh-huh.
And they kind of discount the help that they got at the beginning.
Uh-huh.
And they say that, but they highlight all the really smart things they did during the game.
Yeah,
I bought Boardwalk, you know. So.
Yeah, and then they kind of treat the other players crappier,
interesting,
too.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's amazing. I mean, there's so many psychological things coming out. And then all the stuff about conservatives. conservatives and their cognitive difficulties. See, there's one, I keep a pet conservative on Facebook, and he's a local guy, and he's a pretty sharp guy. He's younger, but there, it just comes, there's times where he just cannot, and this guy has a business. I don't know what the software does, but he created software and he sells it. It's some kind of business thing. So he's got to have some smarts. But, I mean, there's just times where he just can't really understand what I'm trying to say on stuff. And, and you just end up talking past each other. There's like conservatives generally, this is why I'm amazed that they could be computer programs, because they generally cannot follow any argument all the way to its logical conclusion. They will always stop somewhere along the way that where it pleases them. You know, no ability to detect nuance or anything at all. And there was some studies done in Germany that I thought were interesting back in the 80s, and it was about humor. And they used the authoritarianism scale to, and said that if you're more authoritarian, you're more like conservative. Yeah, and of course, Germans are pretty concerned about these things. They remember the good Germans, you know, back in World War II.
Not many of those people left alive. But
right, but they don't want it to happen again. And what they found out was that people who ranked high in authoritarianism, and that is that they follow authority more than they try to be authority, people who ranked high on that, they got sex jokes. And they got your standard joke where you have a setup and a punchline.
Yeah.
But when you got into absurdity stuff, like, say, Monty Python or something, they just couldn't understand it at all and hated it. You know, there's just so many differences like this. And it's, I don't know. It makes me wonder if we'll ever be able to have a better world and society, and where things are done because they're the reasonable, you know.
Well, the thing is that, you know, a lot of this stuff, we could get into a whole show on this, you know, about the reasons why working people will often, you know, say things and do things that work against their best interests. In fact, there was a classic book by Thomas Frank, What's the Matter with Kansas?
Right.
But, you know, a lot of this comes from several factors. One, the corporate media, 24/7, you know, this extends.
Well, see,
this is not just news programs; it's entertainment programs that has this propaganda.
Every commercial, programs,
every commercial,
it doesn't just sell you a product; it sells you what brings you the product.
Yes, and the ideology behind it. But anyway, real quick, in the few minutes we got left, I just want to let the listeners know about the upcoming Labor Notes conference next weekend in Chicago. And just a little background, Labor Notes is a nonprofit organization and a network for rank-and-file union members and grassroots labor activists. And it's a title also of their monthly magazine. And the magazine reports news and analysis about labor activity or problems facing the labor movement. In its pages, it advocates for a revitalization of the labor movement through social movement, unionism, and union democracy. And Labor Notes is based out of Detroit, Michigan. And also has an office in Brooklyn, New York. But anyway, just to go on a little
based bit. In the colony of Detroit.
Yeah, in the colony of Detroit, yeah. A little history here I'm going to bypass on, but just to let you know that every 2 years, Labor Notes holds a national conference that attracts over 1,000 union members and leaders from across the United States, Canada, Mexico, and abroad. And the purpose of these conferences is to help activists build networks based on common issues. And that conference is going to be up in Chicago this coming Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I'm going to be attending. I think Bill's going to come up on Saturday. Bob's going to be here holding down the fort, and we're going to call in and give you a live report.
Wonderful. Yeah, I might get late. I might have to work I might get real lazy next week, though.
Okay, so we'll see what happens. Well, Bill's possibility, but I'm definitely going. There's going to be, anyway, it's interesting, some of the workshops they're having up there, public sector strikes. What happened at VW, Volkswagen, organizing along Walmart's supply chain, labor struggles in Latin America, immigration reform, where do we go from here, labor and independent politics, and then they got other ones that are more kind of hone your skills and get inspired with some of these other workshops, assertive grievance handling, beating the boss in discipline cases, secrets of successful organizing, building a stewards council, bargaining under Obamacare, creative organizing and strategic mischief. I've got to go to that one.
Dave, what are stewards?
Oh, Union Stewards?
We haven't had it. I haven't seen one for a long time.
Oh, yeah, good point, Bill. I mean, yeah, that happened to your union, too. Anyway, there's going to be some international guests there as well from Argentina, Bangladesh, Brazil, Chile, El Salvador, India, Liberia, Hong Kong, Japan, Korea, Mexico, Turkey, and elsewhere. And also, they said that the join with the American Postal Workers Union on that Saturday at lunchtime as they march on a local Staples store to demand saving postal service and union postal jobs. And just to let you also know that Kashama Sawant, the Socialist City Council person from Seattle, is going to be there. And Bob mentioned earlier in the show, too, that the mayor of Richmond.